Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money. Because whether or not we like it, money matters. And I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French. And my guest is Andrea Tucker, who is director of home loan originator company Mortgage Me.
But what we need to constantly advise people now is make sure that you have got a backup for electricity. Make sure that your neighborhood's got good fiber. Those are almost kind of the foundational aspects that so many of us are looking for now because the world has changed so dramatically.
I came across an article by Andrea about the pros and cons when deciding whether to buy a property, build from new, or renovate your existing home. And I thought this was so relevant in this new world where many people are changing the usage of their homes given the work from home environment. So welcome, Andrea, to the podcast. And my first question to you is, are we seeing a shift in the residential property market at the moment due to this new way of work?
Yes, we absolutely are. There have been so many factors that have impacted what the industry what's happened to the industry over the last 2 years. Great pandemics, the economic factors as a result of that pandemic. And then on a smaller scale, closer to home, people are just looking for something different. They're looking for something that is more suitable to their current lifestyle. And it's because of that that we've seen the shifts that we have to different provinces and different shifts around what kind of houses people are living in at the moment.
And I think that is so true, the shift of provinces. You know, I live in the Cape and we're seeing a massive influx of people who now want to, you know, who want to work from here, but they can still, you know, maybe they're counting based, but they can work from here remotely. We're seeing foreigners coming to live here and work remotely. So really, really interesting space. Well, I think what was the loss for commercial property, obviously office rentals and all of that, has really been, I think, a bonus for residential property. So just, yeah, very, very interesting. But now, this is the main point that I think a lot of people are asking why I wanted to do the podcast is, okay, I need more space or I need to change the way my home works for me. So do you buy, do you renovate, or do you build your perfect home? Now, I must just tell you, I've done all of the above in my lifetime. I've renovated. And the house I currently live in is, we built it 7 years ago, mm-hmm. but that was because we couldn't find anything in the property market where we live in Cape Town that suited our needs at our price point. Because, of course, Western Cape properties, you know, are very expensive. And also we didn't find anything. So we built. And we've been really happy with the decision. But I have to tell you, I wouldn't call it a great investment because it takes a long time for the cost of a build to catch up with residential property. I mean, with the cost of buying, I should say.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I've also done all three of the above and also moved into this house that we built about 6 years ago. And we debated, my husband and I, for about 2 years while house hunting as to what the next step for us was. And big decision maker for us was around the number of properties we'd seen that we'd walked into and we said, oh, this is great, but we need to fix that. Or, oh, that kitchen must go. The entertainment area. And we got to the point where we realized we could commit to at least 10 years living in a property that we had built, understanding where we were in our life stages, how many kids we had, where they were going to go to school, the fact that we weren't going to have any more kids. And we could then make an investment, as you say, for a longer period of time, because no build ever goes smoothly and no build ever goes to budget. So we knew up front that we needed to make a proper long-term commitment if we were looking at building. Mm.
And I think that is absolutely true. And it is this, you go in thinking, and I hear it from so many people saying, oh, no, but I can build for cheaper because I will cut out this, I'll cut out that, or I'll find a builder who does this, but I will project manage it. I have never heard anybody come in on the price that they thought that was going to cost them, us included, by the way. So our house was, we're on a slope. And we, you know, the architect did the house, the builder gave us mm-hmm. the quote, and it was all very good until we brought the engineer in. And the engineer was like, mm-hmm. you know, double the steel and double the metal, you know, the steel and the concrete mm-hmm. that you are going to put in. So it doesn't matter how clever you think you are, building is, and I think that is the pro and con. Yes, you get the house you wanted, but mm-hmm. you definitely get it at a price point that is higher than buying. I mean, do you have an idea? Is there kind of a gap, or does it depend on the you know, the region or the city? But is there a gap between the build and buy price?
So there is certainly a premium around building in a big city center. The premium comes just from having more competition. You've got more builders. You've got better access to every kind of furnishing and fitting that you need. But all of that comes via kind of a wealth of building knowledge and skills. Whereas if you're in a small town, you might only have two or three builders. They might be looking at trying to undercut each other in terms of price in order to get the deal. And there are definitely price points around the cost to build per square meter if you go for basic fittings, intermediate, and if you go for the upper end. And everyone thinks, oh, sure, we'll go for basic, so it'll be X. And no one ever does. Everyone always ends up spending in that price bracket above just because the reality hits it and you want your tiles to look like you imagine them. Since you are building your dream home, you don't want to start scrimping on certain features and fittings just because you want to try and get this in under budget. And it snowballs from there.
I know, you and I know what we're talking about, because you do say that. And then it's like, yes, but to retrofit this later would be cost mm-hmm. us so much, we may as well spend it now. So yes, that cost of build keeps going up. You can build, you need to accept that that's probably not the most financially astute thing in the first few years. And I think I agree with you completely. Mm-hmm. If you hold the property mm-hmm. for a long time, then obviously the numbers start to make sense, but certainly not initially. Mm-hmm. But of course, the next thing, if you're going to be building and bringing in the builder bucky, is renovating. And that's another consideration. I must tell you, I'm sitting here in my home office, which my husband is now sharing with me. And I'm like, this is a very tight space. Do we go and do we expand and build on a little bit to give us both more space? I have to keep telling you, I keep thinking I'd be rather investing the money. I'm finding that decision very difficult. But what mm-hmm. are the pros and cons of renovating, making that renovating decision instead?
So it's certainly different for everyone, but it is very much in the middle of that continuum around starting with an entry-level house that might feel a bit lived in, might not have the best color walls, might not have the floors that you're looking for, but it comes at a price point, versus the other end of the scale, which is where you get to customize absolutely everything in your property. Mm-hmm. The renovation journey starts midway in between there, and you can almost get the best of both worlds. And the decision for my husband and I 14 years ago, time flies, was to buy a property, and we decided to live in it. Before we did anything to that property, we promised that we'd live in there for a year before we made any holes in walls or bashed anything down or even painted. And that gave us the opportunity to really get a feel of what that house looked like and how we could live in it. And then we made the decision every year to commit a certain amount of money towards the upkeep of this property and improving the aspects that we knew we couldn't live with.
Mm-hmm. And I, you know, we, again, same story. We did this before the mm-hmm. Humble Wolf, we did the renovation. And what piece of advice we were given, which I thought was a really good piece of advice, was they said, spend the money on the architectural plans for the full build, for the full renovation, so that over time you're not doing it piecemeal and it starts to look odd. Have a plan mm-hmm. and then implement that plan over time. And I thought that was quite a good good piece of advice, because if you're just doing a little bit here and a little bit there, then it starts to not all work together. Whereas if you kind of say, right, over the next 5 years we will renovate so that the end point will look like this, how do we do that piecemeal? I think that is, you know, really, a really good idea. And I also want to ask you, though, one of the things when it comes to both renovating and building is around home loans. So you obviously on the home loan origination mm-hmm. side, how hard is it, for example, to get a building, a mortgage to build, you know, from scratch? I mean, are the banks a lot more conservative on that?
So the banks have just been a lot more conservative over the last 2 years in general. But if we look back to the last 5 years, there are two different kinds of loans you need to look at. First of all, it's around buying the piece of land. And you start paying off that loan from the moment that the land has been transferred into your name. And you don't have to pay rates and taxes on that property until you start. Well, let's say you have bought an empty property, so there's nothing on the land. You don't start paying rates and taxes on there until you break ground. So you can look at saving a bit of money when it comes to that monthly cost. But you then need to take your plans that have been approved to the bank with quotes from builders, contingency plans. You're always going to need that element of that built into the top of that. And as long as you've got all of your paperwork and the piece of property that you've purchased has been valued correctly, you haven't overpaid for that, then the banks don't see this as any different to a normal home loan. They just don't pay the money out upfront. They will pay it out in tranches based on a project plan. So there's just more paperwork involved, but the banks do see this as a viable long-term credit sale for them, as long as you've proven that this is a viable property to build on and that you've thought through what your building process is going to look like.
And how do they manage these overruns, though? Because that, you know, suddenly you think that this is what the build's going to cost you, but now it's going to cost you 25% more, but you haven't been approved for that mortgage. I mean, how does one navigate that space?
So it's always good to go into a build with some funds of your own that you're willing to commit to this. And banks also look at an application for a building loan a lot more favorably if you can prove that you've got some cash assets that you can call on if that happens. Otherwise, you just need to go back to the bank and, again, with more paperwork, ask for more money. And as long as that doesn't require them to grant credit irresponsibly, so they will do another income and an expense assessment on you and your household, and they will keep granting extensions onto that as long as you look like you're going to be able to pay that. But it does is to have funds available as a cash-based investment, or through that process of you building, if you know that you're going to be putting your house on the market, you could look at taking all of the cash that comes out of that sale once that sale's been affected and the funds paid across, and you could look at paying off quite a big chunk of that building loan and using that as collateral almost against the extra expenses you might be looking at paying.
Yes, and I mean, in our case, we bought the land cash. So I suppose that also, if you've got that as collateral, it does help the loan. But I must tell you, we did, you know, we've come up against that boundary of the mortgage, and we had to try and navigate that space. And it is, so these are some of the things you've got to consider. And it always comes down to, for me, everything is cash flow. It's just having some liquidity. So don't commit to the maximum bond that you possibly humanly can get. Make sure you've got some leeway, especially when going into a build. And then looking at a renovation, if you go to your bank and you've already got an existing mortgage and you say, listen, I'm going to be building something that's going to add value. I mean, like, at what point would a bank give you an extension on your home loan for renovations?
So you've got a couple of options available to you. When you first take up your home loan with the bank that you have elected to pursue via the origination process, if you go directly to a bank, you can build into your home loan access funds. It's called an access bond. I think they've got slightly different names at each of the banks. But if you're buying what you know is going to be a fixer-upper and you want to have a bit of a renovation plan in place over the next foreseeable couple of years, then you can build that fat in, and it gives you access to the funds that you are paying into your home loan. It gives you access to those when you need them. So a lot of people sign up for an access bond attached to their home loan to manage rainy day expenses and obviously renovations. And at the moment that you have started paying off some of the capital, that's available to you as a homeowner with a home loan to use on renovations and new geezers, or technifying your house, or making your house warmer in winter that doesn't require electricity, or solar geezers. All of that you can then look at using those funds that you've got in reserve, and it just affects your monthly payment against your home loan, but there's no extension granted because you've in effect paid that money to the bank. You're just asking for some of it back, whereas a full extension, if you're looking at doing something a lot bigger, kind of on a grander scale that involves bashing walls down or something like that, and you haven't got the funds available in access, you can then look to refinance your home, and you can go back to your own bank, explain the situation, there's paperwork, there are forms, there are various different documents that you're going to need to require, that you're going to need to provide to the bank. And they will, in fact, recontract with you as a credit customer with possibly a new interest rate and your home loan value changes, which in turn affects your monthly repayments.
And I think that's a very important point to make, is that if you do a further, I think they call it a re-advance or further loan on your mortgage, first of all, they're going to do affordability test. So you've got to be able to prove that you can afford the home loan. Then there's also the cost. There is a cost, of course, you've basically been issued a new mortgage. So there's costs involved there. Mm-hmm. And then your interest rate could possibly increase because you're taking a higher loan value. So it's something you really do need to look at. And I just think if you are renovating, one must maybe, where possible, save the money in advance rather than having to, or building it in your access bond rather than having to go to the bank. Another option, of course, is personal loan, is to actually just take out a short-term personal loan. And I think there we can get into debate on that, but because personal loans tend to come in at a higher interest rate than mortgage, but you don't have that bond registration costs, all the other costs involved. So you do need to navigate the space a little bit carefully if you need to borrow money. Because people say to me, yes, but I'm improving the value of my property, it'll be worth more. But it's only worth more when you finished it. The bank can revalue it then. They can't look at your house plans and say, oh, yes, we think it'll be worth at least $1 million more. We'll extend you the credits. I think that's where I see a lot of people coming a little bit unstuck.
And that's a question you need to ask yourselves first before the bank asks you that, because the big discussion that you need to have as a family unit when it comes to this property is how long do you plan to live here after you've done the renovations, because you do run the risk of overcapitalizing. And if you increase the value of your property above the rest of the neighborhood or above what someone else is looking to pay for that, then you might not see the financial benefit of these renovations. So don't renovate to look to sell in 2 years' time if you run the risk of overcapitalizing, and renovate rather to live and enjoy those improvements that you make to your property and hope that the industry catches up over a longer period of time and your property value can then increase along with the rest of your neighborhood, for example.
Such a valuable point about being careful about overcapitalizing. Extremely. And like I said, you and I were talking about why we built our homes, and we knew that we could, per square meter, it's cheaper to go buy somewhere, right? But we knew what we wanted, and there's a lifestyle choice that we made in that. It's not necessarily the best financial choice. It was a lifestyle choice, and we hope over time it'll catch up. Exactly the same with renovations. Don't just think that because you're putting in a new pool, suddenly your property will be worth a whole lot more. The costs of building really push you out, can push you out of the price bracket when it comes to selling. So, yeah, very, very valuable. And I think people just, I think we're emotional and we think, well, the property will be worth so much more because I want it. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to attract a different buyer who wants it and prepared to pay a premium on it compared to the rest of the neighborhood. So yeah, very, very valuable. And going back, I just want to go back to a moment to renovation, because of course I wanted to just renovation horror stories. One of the options is of course to buy a fixer upper, or you've been living in your house for a long time. And like me, you want to extend your home office. Now that's one thing, right? I built my house, so I know what's here. Mm-hmm. You buy a fixer upper to renovate, to make it yours. And then you discover, there are things in badly loaded walls or something, or a roof that isn't quite what it expected. I mean, what kind of horror stories, what should one look out for if you're going that fixer upper to renovate route?
Lesson learned, because we learned this the hard way. There was an entire section of my house that had no foundations. And we only discovered this a third of the way through the renovation process. You don't always discover that upfront. But if you are serious about buying property to renovate it, a good piece of advice is to go and track down the plans. That house needs to have registered plans stored with your municipality. And what we discovered was that we had a wine cellar in our house that didn't exist. But according to our house plans, there was one somewhere. But that probably inferred that there were no foundations in that particular part of the house. But it's very important to make sure that you've got a copy of those house plans, because you're going to need to submit those to the council to get approval to renovate. If you're looking at, for example, increasing the square meterage of your house moving walls, changing the roof shape, for example, you're going to need to get those plans approved. So it's a good idea to go and track them down and take a look at the plans versus what you're currently living in. Because I don't know if it's just a Joburg thing or whether this happens across the country. You did kind of allude to this earlier, but you can definitely walk into a house and get a sense of that stepped approach to renovation. And you can see that there was a room added on here and that looks slightly different with a slightly different style. So you want to make sure that your property matches the plans and use that as a basis for your discussions with architects and builders. And they're going to then look at those plans and possibly start chipping away at walls and start looking at things that you wouldn't necessarily do so just without the experience. Mm.
Absolutely. Buyer beware. I tell you that we could put together a book on the horror stories of renovating and building. So let's talk about buying the house, though, because I guess that's sort of the final thing is, okay, I'm in my home, or I want to buy, you know, I'm not going to build, I've decided, listening to this, and renovating, I'm nervous, I'd rather just buy the right property for me. So what should people keep in mind when making that buying decision, especially if it is around the work from home, the new work from home environment?
So the advice that I always give people is to be able to verbalize where you see yourself or yourselves in the short and the medium and the long term. Because buying a property to live in and start paying off in times of increasing interest rates, which is what we need to start expecting to see over the next year or so, means that you need to commit to a five-year plan which sees you living in this property and paying it off. Now, bearing in mind that that is monthly payment every single month for at least 5 years, and you're unlikely to pay off the capital portion of that home loan in the first 5 years. You're just servicing the interest. So you're not creating any wealth within the first 5 years of your home buying journey, unless you have bought yourself a steal in an up-and-coming neighborhood, for example, and the rest of the neighborhood uplifts to the point that your property becomes more valuable. But being able to verbalize where you see yourself in 5 years' time and what you see your family evolving into in the next 5 years versus the next 10 years means that you've put thought into what kind of property you want to buy, what your needs are currently versus 5 years from now, where do you need to live in relation to schools and family and work. And that gives you a very good grounding to start the house hunting journey.
And also make the decision whether or not it makes sense where you are in your life right now to rent for a while. So we're seeing this a lot with people moving. Their children are now sort of mid-high school, and maybe they're making a move now to a different province. And they now wanting to buy the family home, but the family home is going to be irrelevant to them in 3 or 4 years' time when the children leave. So there's this kind of, you know, do we go and spend the money on the family home, but then need to downsize maybe in a couple of years' time? And that decision as well, where you are in your family, look at your children's ages. How long is this house going to be relevant for? How many times do you need all those bedrooms and the financial commitment? And I think exactly your point, those first 5 years, I've done the numbers, you pretty much only break even after about 7 years, given the transaction costs of buying property, of course, your registration costs, your transfer duties. So, you know, I'm here for the next 7 years. What's happening in my life in the next 7 years? Does this make sense? And maybe it's about renting for a couple of years in the kind of home that suits your family and only looking then to buy. So I think that's also part of this whole, we're all in flux, actually. I'm finding that that many people are in flux right now.
I've had the discussion over the last years around whether my study, which we built because we knew we needed a study, but was pretty much storage for the first 4 years that we lived here before we actually needed it. Now all of a sudden it doesn't feel big enough, and I debated whether it was time to build a garden shed, a comfy warm garden shed, to extend the office space that we had available to ourselves. But what we didn't anticipate 2 years ago was what the world was going to look like today. And I'm heading back into the office for half a week every week now. And that would have been a wonderful investment to make for a short period of time. But long term, it would probably just become storage again, much like my study was 3 years ago. So being able to anticipate where the world is going and what those big macroeconomic factors are is difficult. So you don't want to advise people to overthink this, but understanding that short and medium term situation for you and your family is it's going to guide you as to the size of the property that you're looking at, where you should be looking, whether you are prepared to live in a complex, whether you want the stress of a standalone property that has security issues possibly. But what we need to constantly advise people now is make sure that you have got a backup for electricity. Make sure that your neighborhood's got good fiber. Those are almost kind of the foundational aspects that so many of us are looking for now because the world has changed so dramatically.
And so right. You know, we last year spent a lot of money putting in proper battery packs into our home. Mm. And it was one of those, it was several mortgage payments. Like, we were like, this is a lot of money. But the peace of mind going through load shedding now, especially when, like me, I've always worked from home, so it's not a temporary situation. Mm. It has been worth absolutely every cent. And I think if I had to build my house now, I built it 7 years ago, I wish I was building now, because I would be putting in a lot more water tanks. We went through a drought after we built in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
Really formulating around the electricity, about green energy, all of those things. So I think, yes, I agree with you. I think that we've got to look at the way, if you have that opportunity to make a new start, you're buying somewhere, absolutely, or building, absolutely. You've got to tick the kind of the new world, the things we need for this new world that we're living in. So.
And if you are looking at renovating a property for the purpose of selling it, so you've now lived in your house for 10 years and it's time for the upgrade, but do you think maybe it's a good time to make some changes in order to make this a more likely sale? If you've got a solar geyser, if you've got battery backups, if you've got an ability to store water, as you say, those are amazing selling points because that's what people are looking for. So you may have, and again, we've experienced this, we insulated the roof in a previous house that we lived in because all of the heat that we generated just escaped through the ceiling and out the roof. And we spent a lot of money making this house a bit warmer by that insulation. And we tried to use that as a bit of a selling point because it was quite an investment. But everyone's like, no thanks. That's nice to know, but no, where's your solar geyser? So selling properties when you've added these kind of features becomes a very important conversation between you and an estate agent to make sure that they're aware of those things that your house has got that other properties in the neighborhood might not.
And it is true because we had our house valued for no other reason than just because, you know, the estate agent knocked on the door and asked to value it, not selling. But, you know, we said we've got double glazing. We built with double glazing because I don't like being cold and I think it's a lot more heat retained. You know, it's good from an electricity perspective, and that's less interesting to them. And where I think that is, the solar geyser, all of those things. But people do forget that if you insulate a house, it saves you a huge amount of money. And we don't even put on a single heater in winter. We have a pellet fireplace. We don't put on a heater. Look, okay, we're Cape Town. Maybe Jeremy gets colder. But it isn't, you know, just by putting in insulation. So I think I would buy your house if it had extra insulation.
I think I would buy yours too, because we seem to have had a very similar experience with the double glazing and the fireplace and the fact that we don't own an electrical heater, which means we don't need it. And the benefit of that is the house is warm and there's load shedding.
Exactly. Well, Andrea, thank you so much. It's been a really, really useful conversation. And I'm no doubt the listeners have gained a lot from that. And thank you. And for all of those of you listening, remember, if you don't want to miss another podcast, please push the subscribe button.